Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, July 8th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Manissa. Yes, we're together today. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so did you have a fun time on the 4th of July?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, the 4th of July is like, you know,
it was hot. We had a heat wave.
It was hot. It was hot. But you know what? We were okay.
We were sort of okay.
You know, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, so, but, and we got there late and we were in the back, so we didn't get to see a lot of stuff.
No, that was the problem, is that we really need to get going earlier and maybe bring, like, some umbrellas to put over us on a hot day
and,
like that.
And we also need to be ready, like, days before.
A day before.
Yeah.
A day before is plenty. Yeah.
So next year we'll have less trouble with that because the 4th is on Sunday, so you have all of Saturday to get ready.
Right. Well, and I had originally had a different plan, and of course, because of the heat, I had to change the plans because I was going to march my senior students down Main Street doing a senior fitness class.
Right.
And show everybody that, you know, just because we're old, we're still fit.
Right.
That's okay.
And yet we decided not to do that because it was that hot.
And I pulled the plug on it at the 11th hour and said, I can't do this. So,
did you actually ask them if they wanted to do it?
Oh, yeah. I had a bunch of people that were really interested in doing it. And at my Thursday class in North Windham and my Friday class in Mansfield, I told them, that's it. We're not doing it. And they were all very grateful.
So they didn't want to do it.
No, they didn't want to do it.
Right.
And they were thinking of pulling out anyway.
Right.
And, you know, it wouldn't have been fun with two or three people. It would have been fun with a dozen people.
Right.
And that will, you know, so I said, we'll table it until next year.
And
if the weather is good.
And then we'll see what the weather's doing.
Then we're going to do it. I'm going to plan on doing this because I think it's a really great opportunity to show people that just because you've gotten older does not mean you don't have to stop just because you've gotten older. As a matter of fact, you should probably exercise more regularly as you get older.
Right. And the thing is, if you happen to be retired, which not everybody is, but if you happen to be retired, you can build, it's easier to build into your day.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Not everybody does, but theoretically you have more time.
Theoretically, but I'm still, because of the way I teach classes and all, I really do like getting things done early in the day.
Yeah.
Because then you've got the whole day in front of you.
Right.
To do things like, you know, do projects around the house, take a nap.
Right.
I like taking a nap. Naps are good.
Yeah.
Naps are always good.
I guess I'll find that out if I ever retire.
Well, maybe you should do a show on the value of taking naps.
I've done that.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, okay. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could do it again, but definitely, we've mentioned it before.
Yeah, rest is becoming like a very key point in all physical activity right now, and they're just really, really, there's a lot of information out there about rest and why.
Yeah, and as you get older, you need more rest, and
and
people don't understand that, and they don't understand. Like, I have a lot of older women who come in who are very frustrated because they haven't been able to lose weight, and one of the reasons they're not losing weight is they never sit still.
Right.
And they don't understand that when you are constantly moving, your cortisol stays high.
Yeah.
And when your cortisol stays high, it gives you that menno belly, that gives you that midsection belly. And you're constantly dumping sugar into your blood. And if you're not burning up the sugar, you're storing it.
So, yeah.
So resting, the fastest way to get cortisol down is to sit still and breathe deeply and forget about stuff.
Sounds like yoga to me.
yoga, meditation, sitting in your yard, you know, anything that
going
you
to
do
the beach.
where you're not doing anything, where you're just spending time just being. That's a very important part of life.
Right.
It's like Angie over at Yono says, rest is not something nice that you do for yourself occasionally. Rest is essential. Restoration is essential. You need it to make your life healthier at any age.
That's correct.
And when do you make the most fitness gains?
When you're rested.
That's right.
Yeah.
When you're resting.
You know, resting.
Not rested. Resting.
Right.
I mean, you'll function better doing anything, including workout, but anything that you do in your life, you'll do better if you're resting, if you're rested. But resting is when the actual gains happen, because that's when your body can repair itself.
Sure.
And if you're constantly moving, constantly exercising, constantly doing things, your body gets no time to rest. I mean, think about when the cars are on the highway, the cars are always on the highway, they're beating up the highway, and there's never a time when the cars stop so that you can do repairs. And when you take the cars off the highway, then you can get in and do repairs. Well, your body's the same.
Right, right. And I tell a lot of my older athletes, and very few listen to me, I'm talking about the hardcore people, not my senior fitness people, but the hardcore people. I tell them that, you know, there should only be two hard workouts a week.
Right.
And one of them may be a long workout, and the other one just may be a hard workout.
An interval
but
workout,
but everything else should be repair.
Yeah. Or, you know, endurance
and, you know,
or repair.
Just maintenance, basically.
And I tell people, have at least one day where you do almost nothing. You can do an easy leisure walk in nature and or do some stretching. And I have, you know that I'm a big fan of restorative and yin yoga.
Oh, yeah.
And I do them pretty much every day in the evening.
You're wearing a We the People shirt.
I am.
Yeah.
Yes, it says We the People.
Because
I'm still in the 4th of July.
You're still
mode.
Celebrating the 4th.
Yes.
Right? And the 250th.
Even though it's after the 4th. And the 250th, yes.
Right.
Yes, and I want to make it clear that everybody, and this is everybody's country. It's not just people who refer to themselves as patriots. I mean, we can all be patriots. It doesn't matter. And it's so unfortunate that we have such division in this country, that people have been pitted against each other.
Right.
And it's really unfortunate. And that everybody on whatever you call yourself, liberal, conservative, far right, far left, whatever you are, this is everybody's country, and everybody can love this country.
Right.
And really, it's not right to call somebody else, to say to somebody else, you don't love your country, especially if you don't know that.
Right.
You know?
And you know, I consider myself a patriot.
Of course.
And because I do love my country.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about my country right now,
yeah.
But I do love my country. And if you think that because I, you know, speak in one direction or another direction that I'm not, then that needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
Key point, discussed, not argued, discussed.
Right. Yeah.
And, of course, being the local registrar of voters, I have to stay very apolitical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. All right. So we did the 4th. It was very hot. I think we both got a little bit depleted in terms of water and electrolytes because we spent time in the heat. And I wound up having to wait for you out in the heat while you went home and got something. And fortunately, I had two friends who were on bicycles for the day who could stand the heat, and they made stops periodically to get more food and get more refreshment. And they gave me water, and that was really good. So we thought about taking the Cititops and going on Mansfield Hollow Lake, but we didn't do it because by that time I just couldn't be outside anymore. It was that hot. I mean, we had a big heat wave, and we had near or actual 100-degree weather last week. And today, while we're recording the show, it's gotten back down. It's not even 70 degrees today, and it's raining. So it's cooled off, and I think we're not going to have a heat wave for a while. So I like to have hot summers, and I like to go swimming and stuff. But when it's so hot that you can barely be outside, I don't enjoy that. And, you know, it's also makes it problematic to ride your bike, that when you ride your bike in very hot weather, you have to get, you're not only you know, doing the workout, but you have to recover from being depleted from working out in the heat. And I found that, and I did wind up riding and coming home when it was in the mid 80s and humid and not feeling great. And I have to go home, I have to come inside, and thank goodness we have nice air conditioning. I have to lay down and I have to rest and I have to cool off before I can even stretch, you know, and make sure I get hydrated. And that's when, so if you're wondering what electrolytes to use, if you've been sweating heavily, that's when you use the electrolytes that are higher in salt. Or you can do fruit juice and put a little bit of whatever your favorite salt is into the water. And that's when you do consume a little bit more salt, regardless of what your blood pressure status is. I mean, the thing is, if you're somebody who whenever you eat salt, you swell, then you have to be concerned with that. But if you're sweating a lot, you may not, I mean, people can attest to this or not. If you have just sweat a lot, you probably could handle a bit of salt. As I said, it really depends on the person. But I find that, you know, if I've been sweating a lot and then I drink an electrolyte drink that has salt in it, I feel better. And so that's what I do when I get back. And then I recover a little bit better. And, you know, if you stay well hydrated, you're going to recover better. And one of the things I did is I had some time off work. So I wasn't in the office. So I was riding multiple days in a row. I think I got on a bicycle, whether it was outdoors or indoors, from Wednesday to Wednesday through Sunday. I was on a bicycle, whether indoors or outdoors. And today's the first day. I'm going to stay off the bicycle for a couple of days because I think I overdid it because I'm still managing my back and my leg and, you know, my spinal stenosis. So I'm working on that and, you know, trying to figure out, can I live this life and do the things I love to do with the level of spinal stenosis and stuff that I have to manage? And right now I'm managing it with topicals. Today I put on some nice cream that has menthol and a whole bunch of nice anti-inflammatory herbs in it, as well as a cream that has DMSO in it, dimethyl sulfoxide, which helps to draw other minerals into your body. And so if the DMSO cream has magnesium in it, it'll pull the magnesium into your skin. And then I put magnesium oil on. So I have a lot of topicals that I do. I have PT exercises that I do that can help to open up my spine so that the my structures are not sitting on the nerves as much. And that helps. And then I ice my back. And there's so many things that I do, and I have physical therapy, and I have acupuncture and chiropractic. One thing I haven't done, and I've been thinking about doing, is getting massage. I haven't tried to get just an ordinary massage, and that would probably help me too. So, and then just, you know, today I think I need to take it easy, do a little bit of easy stretching, and relax and get off the bike. One of the things that I've noticed is that, you know, I have my stenosis is worse on the left side. To the point where you can see on my CT scans and my MRIs that I have a scoliosis on the left side, so it curves in on the left side, and my PTs have instructed me to lie on my right side to open up that side of my spine. One of the things I've noticed is that I have a very tight hip flexors, and they're much tighter on the left side than on the right side. That if I press on the hip flexor tendon in my groin, it's sore. And I believe that one of the tendons that goes through there is the psoas. And so interesting thing about the psoas muscle. Psoas muscle is an interesting muscle. It's one of your hip flexors. The origin of the psoas muscle is on L4. And L4 is where everything is happening in my body. I have fibrosis along the fecal sac of L4. And I have fibrosis around the nerve root of L4. And that is where the psoas muscle arises. So there's nerves that innervate the psoas that are unhappy. So it's no wonder I have a cranky psoas muscle on this side. And the interesting thing about the psoas is connected to your vagus nerve. It has, so if you have psoas issues, you're going to have other issues. And one of the things I've been having, I came down with a balance issue. And the balance issue seemed to be coming from my head more than my spine. Now I do have some balance issues that are directly related to the spinal stenosis, that I have proprioceptive issues that originate from the spine down. But I was having issues that were coming from my head, that I felt lightheaded and unbalanced from my head. That the way that I knew that I wasn't well was in the beginning of June, I was bending over to wash my feet in the shower, and I almost fell over. And I didn't feel, thank God, I had no fainting, no nausea, no vomiting. In fact, my digestive system is working very well. Thank goodness for that. Maybe a little too well, because I haven't been staying away from the sweets as much as I should have. It's summer. You know, you go to Niantic, then you go to Gumdrops and Lollipops, and they have my favorite fudge, and they have my favorite gummy candies. So now you know I am a person who likes to eat sweets, and I also know that I need to stay away from sweets more, and I'm working on that. Aside from sweets, we eat very well. We eat a lot of really good food, but we also eat our sweets. I actually spent some time cleaning out some of the sweets, some sweets that were like, all right, we had these for a long time, and we didn't eat them, and now they're old, and they don't taste good anymore, so I threw them out.
Yay.
So, anyway, and I set up a box for Ron that's, everything is absolutely gluten-free, so if he wants to snack on something, he has something to snack on.
Mm.
So one of the things that I figured out, I believe that I have vestibular neuritis. So vestibular neuritis usually happens for cause. Because when this started, I felt sick. I felt like I felt kind of feverish. I had headaches. I felt unbalanced. And I had the shakes. I had my tremors. So I assumed that I was having either a flare of Lyme disease or I had a new tick bite. And then I treated myself for Lyme disease. And so I called up my PCP. I had him give me amoxicillin. He gave me 500 milligrams twice a day, which I asked for. And I complemented that with Buhner herbs. And I took a high doses of Buhner herbs in the beginning. And I took Japanese knotweed, cat's claw, kudzu, hotunia, and cryptolepis, and a little bit of teasel. And I had to back off on it because it wound up being too much. And I would find that I would take the doses and then I'd feel really unbalanced and lightheaded. And I also added Chinese skullcap. And I felt too unbalanced and lightheaded when I did it. So I started cutting back the dose. And I found that I decided that I was just going to cut the dose back. So I was taking a little bit every day. And I'm actually, over the course of the antibiotic dose, I started the antibiotics, I think, in the middle of June. In the middle of June. And so he gave me a 4-week supply, so I'm going to be done with those antibiotics this week. So hopefully I'll be okay after I'm done the antibiotics. But I'm going to continue to take at least small amounts of the Buhner herbs until I feel like I'm clear of this. And I'm definitely much better. I haven't been having the episodes of crushing fatigue, and I haven't been having the headaches or the shakes or anything like that. So I'm going to keep taking some of the things for a while longer. I'm also, when I did my blood work, all of my blood work came out perfect. My Lyme Western blot, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, Bartonella, Babesia, Mycoplasma, and Epstein-Barr, perfect. Nothing was elevated. So I haven't seen myself with a perfect a Lyme Western blot in years, but not one band was positive. Now that's from the regular lab. I am going to get tested by a boutique lab that specializes in treating a lot more bands, and they test a lot more species of Lyme. So I'm getting ready to, I've put in to get that tested. I just have to get the appointment set up with the phlebotomist. And once I get that, I'll find out what's going on there and see if I actually have some Lyme. And that will give me more impetus to continue to take Lyme herbs. And I'll go see nice Marissa, the naturopath over at Dow Vitality in Hebron. So I had that, and I think, so when I got ill in early June, I had no respiratory, I had a cold before, I had a cold at the end of May, and then that resolved, and then a few days after I felt the cold resolve, this balance issue came, and then all the other symptoms came. I had the balance issues, and then I had the shakes, and the fever, and the headache, and all that stuff. So I assumed it was either Lyme disease. It could have been a virus. I'm not 100% sure. But when I treated for Lyme disease and took the antibiotics and took the herbs, I gradually got better. And there was the first week I was concerned that I wasn't hitting it hard enough, and I asked my doctor to also give me doxycycline, and then I never took the doxycycline because I was afraid. Ron had a health issue in the interim there. Doxycycline doesn't do well with a lot of people's stomachs, and I've never taken it for that reason. And so one of the things about doxycycline, when you have a tick-borne illness, doxycycline covers more illnesses. So if you happen to have, it will go after Lyme, of course, and it also goes after Lyme. And there's one of the stationary forms it will kill, as well as the active forms. And it will also go after Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, and Bartonella. It won't go after Babesia. If you have Babesia, you have to take, if you want to take a drug, you have to take a Tovaquone and Azithromycin. Well, I didn't come up positive for any of the co-infections, and since I'm not symptomatic right now, I'm not going to treat for co-infections. Although the herbs that I'm still taking, I'm taking a little bit of Cryptolepis, and I'm taking Hotunia, and those two herbs will go after a number of the co-infections as well. So Cryptolepis is one of the keep herbs, kills everything except people. Hotunia will go after both Bartonella and Lyme disease. Not sure if it goes after Babesia, but Cryptolepis definitely does. And then kudzu will go after Lyme disease. And the great thing about kudzu is it gets into your brain and it helps with your neurological healing. I am also, by the way, taking cordyceps. And cordyceps, I think, is really good. If you tolerate cordyceps, the thing about Lyme disease is that Lyme disease goes after your mitochondria, and it will make you very tired. And the mitochondria, mitochondria are part of every cell in your body. They're in the nucleus of every cell in your body, and they are basically the spark plugs. They run the electron transport chain. The electron transport chain is really spark plugs in all of the cells in your body. And coenzyme Q10 runs that, and cordyceps helps the mitochondria to recover. So I'm taking two droppers. Well, all of the others, I've cut back on the doses. I'm taking 5 drops of each of the herbs, and I'm taking a small scoop of modified citrus pectin, which is a great anti-inflammatory, and I'm taking 10 tabs a day, 5 twice a day, of fermented chlorella. So those help to calm Herxes. I was having Herxes and Herxheimer reactions where I was getting increases in symptoms. And the thing that makes you crazy when you're treating tick-borne illness is if you don't feel well after a week, say, you don't know if you're not treating adequately or if you're having a Herx reaction. If it's a Herx reaction, you can just manage the Herx and expect to get better over time. And that was probably what was going on with me because I'm better now. You know, it took a while. And when you take doxycycline, it takes less time to feel better as long as you can get through the stomach stuff because it's a little more potent. You don't have to take as much and you don't have to take it for as long. And, you know, the people are like, well, you have to take the antibiotics for 2 months. You can do that. And you can do that. And, you know, I asked Dr. LaGuardia if he thought I should have another round of the amoxicillin. And he said no, because I was a lot better by the time that I saw him. And so the thing to do there is if you're not going to get more antibiotics is then you figure out, can you do some Buhner herbs? Can you take some oregano oil? Can you take some other essential oils? Food grade, don't forget, cinnamon oil and clove oil go after Lyme. So you can take those. I'm not doing the oregano oil at the moment. And the thing is, oregano oil is good. Oregano oil, the carvacrol in oregano oil will kill. It's another keep. Kills everything except people. Carvacrol will kill parasites. It will kill whatever bacteria you got. If you have any, you know, unfriendly bacteria living in your gut, it'll go after that. And carvacrol kills Lyme. And I think it will go after co-infections as well. So it's a really great thing to have on board. I'm choosing not to take the oregano oil at this point. But I am taking cinnamon oil, and cinnamon oil will go after Lyme disease. There's good studies on cinnamon oil, oregano oil, and clove oil that they will go after Lyme disease, that they've been studied in labs to kill them. So I'm putting a little cinnamon oil in my herbal concoction, and then I'm taking the 2 droppers of cordyceps in the morning. I like to take cordyceps in the morning because it's energizing, and so if you want to have something that stimulates your mitochondria, it's probably a good idea to take it early in the day. If you have that 2:30 feeling, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, you feel exhausted, maybe you should take some cordyceps. Because don't you tell me you're constantly tired?
Yeah.
Maybe we give you some cordyceps. You just take, tell me,
take care of me.
Tell me, but then I give you more stuff to take and you complain about that.
It's true. I take
so a the lot thing of stuff. Is, you'd have to tell me if you want to do a. I give you a liquid extract. I could give you caps. I could also give you powder, and I'm thinking about getting the powder too.
Okay.
The only reason I don't think I'm going to take the powder because some days I wind up not taking my protein shake. I like to put the powder in my protein shake because the mushrooms taste earthy. And the amount of mushroom you're going to put in your protein shake, you're not going to taste it, especially when it's covered up with all the chocolate stuff you put in there. You're not going to taste it at all. So if you put the powder in, on a particular day you don't take your protein shake, you might not take it. That's why I do the liquid extract for the cordyceps, because I'm in the habit of taking liquid extracts first thing in the morning. I am a big motherwort person, and motherwort is my friend. My goodness. And motherwort grows crazy. It's a great weed. It will seed itself and grow all over the place if you have any growing. And I have two friends who make me motherwort tincture. And so I always have motherwort around. And I take two droppers twice a day of the motherwort. Motherwort is great because it's calming and it's a cardio tonic. And, you know, it helps with arrhythmias. And one of the unfortunate things about Lyme is that it's cardiotoxic. Lyme antigens can go after your heart. They'll go after anything, but they can give you palpitations, and I'm prone to getting occasional palpitations, and so I take motherwort all the time for that. I also take hawthorn all the time, and hawthorn is another thing you can take when you have Lyme disease because it's really helpful for the cardiac effects of Lyme, and I take magnesium for that as well. So right now, I am still getting intermittent lightheadedness. I had an interesting thing happen yesterday. I was cleaning out some of the candy that we have, you know, realizing that I buy candy and then we don't eat it all the time.
No.
Because, you know, we go through phases where we're not eating a lot of candy or, you know, I'm taking a break from sugar. And then we have this stuff that I bought, and I had some stuff that was lying around for a couple years. So when I do that, what I'll do is I'll take some of the candy and I'll take bites of it to see if it's still good. Well, then after a while, you're 150, 200 calories in. And so, and I hadn't eaten lunch recently. And so I took these bites of this candy. And then after a while, I got lightheaded. I got my balance issues and they got remarkably worse. So the other thing that happened was when I was at the boombox parade, I was waiting in line. I was holding my spot in line for Ron, and I was next to Gates Nissan, Columbia Ford Kia, and they had an ice cream truck. They were driving an ice cream truck and giving out ice cream. And I said, "Hey, you're giving out ice cream. That's nice. How much are you selling it for?" They said, "We're not selling it. Do you want some?" I said, "Yes, please. I will take an ice pop." So they handed me one of those ice pops in plastic that, you know, you throw in your it's liquid and you throw it in your freezer and it freezes, and then you open it up and then you suck out the ice from the plastic container. So they gave me a blue one, which I was delighted to have because it was so hot, and I ate it, and not long after I ate that, I felt a little lightheaded. So I discovered that that sugar makes these balance symptoms worse. So I looked up the difference between vestibular neuritis and labyrinthitis. So if you have labyrinthitis, you're going to they're different branches of the vestibulocochlear nerve. So if you have labyrinthitis, you have the nerve that controls the semicircular canals in your ears. Semicircular canals are where your balance happens. And so if you have labyrinthitis, you're going to get vertigo. Well, I have absolutely no vertigo. So thank goodness for that. If you have vestibular neuritis, then that's a different branch of the vestibulocochlear nerve. And what will tend to happen is you'll get bouts of acute tinnitus, pressure in your ears, and you might have some, and you'll have balance issues, and you might have some ear pain, and, But you won't necessarily have the vestibular symptoms. You won't have the nausea, vomiting, vertigo. But you'll, when you stand up, you won't be able to keep your balance. So when I ate the sugar, the symptoms got worse. And without vertigo, just standing up, I felt like it was hard to hold on to my balance. So I think I have vestibular neuritis. So Lyme absolutely can go. It'll go after anything that's weak. So it'll go after, it chooses its nerves. If that nerve looks good, it'll go after it. So this time I got lucky. And the Lyme appears to have gone after my vestibular system. So, and again, not the, thank goodness, not the labyrinth, but the vestibular cochlear nerve, which is where, if it's the vestibular cochlear nerve, then it can give you balance issues, hearing issues, pressure and pain in your ears. So these symptoms have been coming and going, and they're improving. You know, I'm not having as much bouts of it as I was when I first came down with this. But what's interesting is that because they got worse eating sugar, sugar does two things. It raises your blood sugar and it increases inflammation. So what I need to do, obviously not eating sugar would be a good thing to do, but I need to focus on inflammation. And then, of course, when you have balance issues, now I have balance issues as well. You'll have balance issues when you have anything going on with the vagus nerve. And we know I do, because, you know, the vagus nerve gets upset when you have balance issues. And when you have an upset vagus nerve, it will give you balance issues. My vagus nerve is very sensitive now. You know, it's sensitive since I had the COVID vaccine in 21. And of course, again, Lyme will go after anything that's weak. So it will go after your vagus nerve too. And that's why some people get these flashes of mast cell activation where they have these, you know, racing heart and sweating and balance issues and orthostatic issues. So, and then I already have the spinal stenosis, and the spinal stenosis is affecting my my psoas muscle, and the psoas muscle is connected to the vagus nerve. So we got all these things going on. So the deal is, calm down, you know, get some good rest, do some good deep breathing, some yin restorative yoga, stretch out my psoas muscle, make sure I have lots of electrolytes. When you have any balance issues, taking water with electrolytes is always going to help. Staying well hydrated is going to help. When you have water with electrolytes on board, the big thing that it does is it gets circulation into your brain. When you don't have as much circulation into your brain, you're going to be more lightheaded and dizzy. And of course, in this terrible heat, that's, you're going to be more likely to have issues like that. But also to keep the inflammation down, so you want, if to keep the inflammation down, one of the things to do is to not eat foods that increase inflammation. I thought maybe dairy was affecting me a little bit. If I have a little bit of dairy, like a little bit of cheese on my salad, like high quality cheese, it seems not to be a big deal. But eating a lot of ice cream. Now, ice cream, you're doing dairy. You have the dairy and the sugar. So that could be an issue. But eating too much sugar, sugar causes inflammation. And if you're having an inflammatory condition, sugar is always going to make it worse. So those are the things to look at. And I actually, after I started to feel lightheaded after eating that sugar, I was annoyed that I had done it because now I was lightheaded, but I was glad because it taught me something. I had learned something that sugar, both, I'm not 100% sure if it's the raise in the blood sugar as much as the increase in inflammation, because I felt pressure in my ears. I had some pain and my lightheaded symptoms, and my balance symptoms got worse, and I had some ringing in my ears. So right now at this moment, I have some of those symptoms, but they're mild. Any kind of stimulation kind of makes the whole situation worse. So right now I'm looking at screens. I'm appearing at two screens. I can see you on Facebook Live, and I'm also looking at my iPad for my outline. So screens are not wonderful for, you know, when you have, well, especially for vagal symptoms. They do, they give you little increases in cortisol all the time. So if you're stressed out, scrolling, It's not scrolling. Doom scrolling is not just bad for your brain because you're looking at upsetting things. It's also bad because your eyes are having to focus on the screen, and that that affects your vagus nerve. That affects your stress directly. That's what's going on with my symptoms. So if you want to know what some symptoms of it, try to telling the difference between which tick-borne illness you have. And there's all these ticks that are carrying all these co-infections right now. So Lyme disease generally, you'll start off, you might have the rash. You might get an erythema migrans rash, which is the, when you get bitten by the tick, you'll have this, a red ring around the tick bite, which may get bigger and bigger. And erythema migrans rashes can look different ways. They can be absolutely solid. When I had the erythema migrans rash that I had in 2010, it started out as a little red circle around the tick bite, and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was totally filled in. It never had that bullseye appearance. It was just a big red rash, and I thought I just had cellulitis. And then I went to the doctor, and she said, "Oh, nice erythema migrans. Here, take these antibiotics." And in 2 days, the thing was gone. I mean, it was definitely Lyme disease. So you can get the rash. Remember, 30% of people get the rash. So people are like, "I don't remember being bitten by a tick." Well, yeah, you don't, because the ticks can be super tiny, and they like to bite you in places where they can hide. So they go in your hairline, they go in your armpits, they go behind your knees, they go in your groin. That's where mine was. It was in my groin. And you could never see them. And I told somebody this, and they didn't realize it, that ticks have anesthetic in their mouth parts. And so you don't feel them biting you. I mean, I suppose you can, but most people don't feel it when they bite because they have anesthetic in their mouth parts. And so so you can absolutely be bit and never know you were bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are like, "I have all these symptoms, but I don't remember being bitten by a tick." Well, you don't have to remember being bitten by a tick, because most of the time you don't get the erythema migrans rash. I've definitely been symptomatic numerous times since 2010, when I did get the erythema migrans, but I have not gotten the rash since then. Actually, there was a spot on my, I shouldn't say that, because there was a spot on my inner thigh that was a small, maybe quarter-sized red spot that I don't know if it had been a tick bite. It definitely went away, but it might have been a tick bite. That's a possibility. So I'm not 100% sure. So that's the other thing. I don't know if this was a new bite or a reemergence of Old Lyme. No offense to the beautiful town of Old Lyme. So Lyme disease, your first symptoms might be you get the rash, you'll be ultra tired, like, you know, extremely tired, like you sleep for the night and you wake up in the morning and you're like, "Okay, I could sleep again the whole night," because Lyme goes after your mitochondria, so it makes you really, really tired. So if you have Lyme disease and you're like, "Why am I so tired?" Don't question it. You are. And it's okay to rest. And you know, getting as much rest as you can. The thing is, people are busy and they don't want to stay home. And the thing with Lyme is not, as far as we know, it's not contagious. It might be contagious if you're in very close contact with somebody. You know, if you share blood, saliva, like if you're intimate with somebody, you might be able to transmit it. That's not 100% clear, but it's possible. But the thing is, you can go to work. You're not going to spread Lyme just by working with people. So people tend to go to work and then they're absolutely beat because they've been going to work. And, you know, really the best thing is to rest. It's just treat it and rest. And that's the unfortunate thing about when you don't have a good way to stay home from work. You know, you only have so many sick days, or you're self-employed and you have the don't work, don't eat mode, and it's hard to rest, then it's harder to get over this. So you get extremely tired. You can get headaches. You can get headaches in the back of your neck, but you can get headaches all over as well. And you can get neurological symptoms. You can get you can get tremors, and you can get neuropathies, where you have changes in sensation in various parts of your body. And you can have blurred vision. And you can get palpitations, and you can get sort of mast cell symptoms where you suddenly feel very anxious and your heart starts racing. You can get palpitations. And you can absolutely get joint pain. I am one of those people, I think that it's genetic. I understood this from my colleague Thomas Moorcroft, that Lyme, it has a genetic component to it, that depending on your genetics, you may or may not get certain symptoms like joint pain. And I don't get joint pain from Lyme disease. I will get, I mean, I don't know if it made my stenosis worse. It might have, but I don't have, like, I didn't have any increased pain, you know, that achy sensation. COVID definitely gave me joint pain, you know, that it gave me back pain and my joints were a little achy. And when you have a flu-like illness, you'll often get joint pain in various joints in your body. Lyme doesn't do that to me. I don't get knee pain or joint pain or, increased back pain. I'll have the back pain that I usually have, but there's no increases in pain. I just get the neurological symptoms, you know, that I get, the fatigue, I get cranky, and I get tremors. And so right now, those symptoms are pretty much gone. The only residual I seem to have is the vestibular neuritis, and that is improving. So thank goodness. And I'm taking stuff to help with that. I'm taking mixed phospholipids. It has phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine, and phosphatidylethanolamine. So it's a bunch of phospholipids. And when you take the phospholipids, it helps to rebuild your nerves, and it will also help to usher in other helpful molecules like magnesium and vitamin B12 and vitamin B1 into your nerves. So those are symptoms of Lyme disease. And the other thing is, if you have a doctor who won't treat you, even though they won't treat you because they want to test you first, the thing is that if they're doing standard testing from standard labs, it might not show up. And it might not show up for another month, and then your symptoms are a lot worse. So if you think you have Lyme disease and you're having the symptoms, make a big deal about it. Talk to the doctor, your prescribing doc. Tell them that you're really not feeling well. You feel like you have Lyme disease, and tell them all the symptoms that you have. And if they won't prescribe, then I recommend going to urgent care, where they're more likely to take care of you. And you have to figure out where those are in your area. And as public service, I'm just going to tell you, you're more likely to get treated prophylactically if you go to the urgent care in stores from UConn, as well as Antero Wellness in Ashford. I'm not necessarily saying that. This is not a call to action. This doesn't mean you should definitely go there. But I feel like this is life and death. This is really, you know, it's kind of a big deal that they're more likely to treat you whether they have a positive test or not. Because Lyme is not supposed to be a diagnosis by a test. It's supposed to be a clinical diagnosis. And you use the testing as a confirmatory, which is why I'm going to go get the test from the other lab, the boutique lab, through my naturopath. And that will be more confirmatory for me. If you have Babesia is interesting because it's an intracellular parasite, and Babesia can give you anemia. It likes to live in your red blood cells, so your body will then go and destroy your red blood cells trying to kill the Babesia, and you wind up anemic. So one of the symptoms you get from Babesia is air hunger. You can also get the fatigue. You can also get a punctate rash. In other words, you know, spots all over your body. And Babesia will do that. And really, if somebody's going to test you, they should be testing for co-infections too, every time, because the ticks that are being tested have co-infections in them. Is that what you read, Ron?
Yes.
Yes, they have co-infections in them. And you had Babesia.
Mm-hmm.
And you wound up a few years ago, you had Babesia and you took azithromycin and etoveqone. So they give you azithromycin, which is an alternative to, you know, it's an alternative to doxycycline. And azithromycin, I don't mind taking because I do well with it. You know, yeah, I take my Saccharomyces boulardii with it and I take the antibiotic and it doesn't bother me. It doesn't make me nauseous or do anything bad. I've never taken etoveqone because I've never been diagnosed with acute Babesia. When I did my first test at the naturopath, they thought there was some Babesia in there and I just took the appropriate Buhner herbs to help it. All right. If you have Ehrlichia or anaplasma, the those symptoms are they're similar, but you're gonna be a lot sicker. You're gonna have a high fever. You're gonna have more of the headaches and joint pain and body aches, and you're gonna be pretty sick. So, if you feel really sick and it's getting worse, it's quite possible that you have Ehrlichia or anaplasma. The thing about Ehrlichia and anaplasma is that doxycycline will kill it. So, getting the doxycycline on board is pretty important. And amoxicillin won't really go after it. Amoxicillin will go after Lyme. It won't go after Ehrlichia and anaplasma as well. And if I thought I had Ehrlichiosis or anaplasma, I would have figured out a way to take the doxycycline. Bartonella. Now, Bartonella, it's controversial as to whether it's in ticks, but we think of it as a tick-borne illness. You can get it from cats. You can get it other ways. And I tested positive for Bartonella early on. And we think of it as a co-infection. So I always test for it. And because I had it. Now, doxycycline will go after Bartonella, but Bartonella, if you have it really bad and for a long time, it also gets treated with things like methylene blue, and also gets treated with the antibiotic that they treat tuberculosis with, which is rifampin, which is kind of a big deal. So all of these things can be treated, and Bartonella tends to give really bad emotional symptoms. People will be very, very anxious and very excitable and agitated when they have Bartonella. And when you treat the Bartonella, you tend to calm down. Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, it's funny that it's also known as Rickettsia. Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever is not, you know, it's here. It's even though it's called Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, it's not just out west anymore. You can get it. I've had people test positive for it locally. Doxycycline will go after that, and you know, if you have it. I've seen people test positive for it and not have spots on their bodies. But you can get spots on your body, and you can have it and not know it. So sometimes I'll test for that. It's unusual to see it, but it's something that you might see. And then there's tick-borne relapsing fever, which is Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the main symptom of Lyme, and that's the one that likes to hang out in my body. But there's other species of Borrelia, and it's caused by a different species. If you test positive for that species, you can treat it. But tick-borne relapsing fever, you get better and worse and better and worse. And I can talk to you about what tick-borne relapsing fever is. In fact, maybe that's how we'll end today. So tick-borne relapsing fever, since we're there, it's caused by another spirochete. It's not caused by Borrelia burgdorferi. It's caused by Borrelia hermsii, Borrelia parkeri, Borrelia turricatae, and most commonly is Borrelia hermsii. So it's other species of Borrelia. They're other spirochetes, but they're not the same species that causes general Lyme disease, Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the one that you see the most around here. If you test positive for Borrelia hermsii, and again, you're not going to get tested for that unless you ask for it specifically by the main major labs. And you might have to go to a naturopath and get a test from a boutique lab to find out if you have that. And they're transmitted by a soft tick. It's a different tick. It's not transmitted by the Ixodes tick, which gives you Borrelia burgdorferi. It's the Ornithodoros species. And they feed at night, and it's usually painless, but tick bites in general are painless. And they feed for 15 to 30 minutes after dropping off, so you'll never know you had it. So they're soft ticks. They feed on small mammals and rodents like mice, chipmunks, squirrels, rats, and rabbits. And in the absence of these hosts, will feed on any other warm-blooded mammals, including humans. Tick-borne relapsing fever can occur in most of the western portion of the U.S., west of the Mississippi River, with most cases occurring west of the Rocky Mountains. So I guess you're a little less likely to get it out here, but not impossible. When you travel to those endemic states, you might get it there as well. And then there's a lot of cases that occur among people vacationing in rodent-infested cabins in wooded and mountainous areas. It's characterized by recurring episodes of fever accompanied by other nonspecific symptoms, including headaches, muscle pain, joint pain, chills, vomiting, and abdominal pain. There's bacterial presence. It tends to be greater among pregnant women and may sometimes result in more severe infection. And the symptoms tend to develop within 7 days after the tick bite. They last an average of 3 days and are followed by an asymptomatic period lasting anywhere from 4 to 14 days, and then relapse an average of 3 times, but can recur up to 10 times if you don't get treated. A definitive diagnosis of tick-borne relapsing fever is made by detecting Borrelia spirochetes in the patient's smears of blood, bone marrow, or cerebrospinal fluid. The best time to detect spirochetes in patient blood samples is when the patient has a fever. To treat it, actually, tick-borne relapsing fever often resolves on its own, but treatment with antibiotics can help resolve faster. They use erythromycin, which I can't take, tetracycline, chloramphenicol, and penicillin. So I wonder if they use penicillin, if you could use amoxicillin. The current recommendation of antibiotic therapy is only 7 days. Erythromycin or penicillin antibiotics are recommended for use by young children or pregnant women. So I would just take the penicillin because I'm thankfully apparently not allergic to penicillin. If you are, you could do erythromycin, although erythromycin is one of the ones that's more likely to give you nausea and vomiting. And I have that on my permanent record as I don't take erythromycin. So the best way to protect yourself from tick-borne relapsing fever is to avoid exposure to rodent and tick-infested dwellings. Homes and vacation cabins should be rodent-proofed, and any rodent nesting materials should be removed. Tick exposure can be avoided by fumigating homes with compounds containing permethrins or pyrethrins and using insecticide containing DEET on skin and clothing, or whatever your thing is that you like to prevent ticks. Like if you use stuff with essential oils, you could use that too. And you could use picaridin, whatever it is you want to use. And also the undecanoic acid, the bio-UD, that can help too. That can be preventative too. And then, you know, there's your cedar oil, there's your rose geranium, there's your citronella, all those things as well. So that's the latest on tick stuff. So we have a few more minutes. So let's talk about a couple more things. Just some here. I have a little bit of a puff piece. That fruit juice lowers depression. So researchers found that a simple addition to a 5-a-day diet was associated with improved mental well-being in adults with low fruit and vegetable intake. There was new research from Newcastle University that suggests that drinking a daily glass of 100% fruit juice or a smoothie as part of the country's 5-a-day nutrition recommendation may help improve your well-being. There was a randomized control trial, and adults who typically ate very few fruits and vegetables received support to increase their intake to the recommended 5 daily portions. Some participants followed the plan using only whole fruits and vegetables, while others included a daily serving of fruit juice or a smoothie. After 4 weeks, both groups successfully increased their fruit and vegetable consumption. However, participants who added fruit juice reported lower depression scores than those who did not. When I go to the store today, I'm going to get some smoothie. The findings published in the peer-reviewed British Journal of Nutrition and funded by the Fruit Juice Science Center added to a growing body of evidence suggesting that practical dietary changes may benefit mental health. So there was a doctor who conducted the research at Newcastle University who said that most people know that eating 5 a day can be good for your health. A lot of people struggle to do that. The trial showed that when people with low fruit and vegetable intake were provided with targeted financial and educational support to address common barriers to eating 5 a day, they were able to make meaningful changes to their diet. They found that simple, cost-effective solutions like drinking a small glass of 100% fruit juice or a daily smoothie could help people reach their 5 a day with potential benefit for mental well-being. Consuming the recommended amount of fruits and vegetables has been linked to a lower risk of chronic disease, better long-term health. Only about 17% of adults in the UK and 10% of teenagers currently meet the 5-a-day recommendation. My goodness. So in the trial, it showed lower depression scores. The four-week study involved participants who were eating two or fewer portions of fruits and vegetables a day at the start, all received support to reach five daily portions. One group ate only whole fruits and vegetables, while the other combined whole produce with one daily glass of fruit juice or smoothies. The researchers assessed mood using validated questionnaires that measured anxiety and depression. Participants who consumed fruit juice and smoothies alongside whole fruits and vegetables scored lower on measures of depression than the control group. Their scores were 2.52 points lower on a 27-point scale. I'm going to go back to... I was stopped drinking the smoothies because I'm having a little bit of fruit first thing in the morning. I thought, I'll just have some nice fruit, and I put a little almond butter on it, and that's my first break the fast. And then I have a bigger breakfast later on, but I have a small caloric intake of... But I think I'm going to start drinking the juice. It says do the fruit and the juice. Dietary records indicated that both groups increased their fiber intake by an estimated 8 to 10 grams a day, which suggests that adding fruit juice did not discourage participants from eating other fiber-rich fruits and vegetables, and they had no negative health effects. No effects on metabolic health on those who consumed fruit juice and smoothies during their four-week intervention, despite ongoing concerns about sugar intake. There was a lecturer that found that given the ongoing cost of living pressures in the UK, the price of fresh produce is often a barrier for people trying to eat more fruits and vegetables. If you drink a daily glass of fruit juice or smoothie, it could be part of the solution. Fruit juice drinkers have reduced depression scores, and that's worthy of further explanation, particularly in individuals experiencing poor mental well-being, and backs up studies which report improved brain blood flow and cognitive function after people drink citrus juices. Simple dietary changes like increasing fruit intake, including through a daily glass of juice, could play a supporting role in mental well-being. So that's very interesting. That I think what happens is if you have a smoothie, and I would recommend not to get clear juices. I think it would be better if you, of course, you can make your own smoothie if you want to at home. And if you just can't be bothered to do that, because I can't, I'm just too... That would be too much for me to expect me to have all the... I'd have to keep all the fruit on hand to make the smoothie, and then I have to make it and deal with the blender and stuff like that. So I know it's just not going to happen. So I personally would buy a smoothie. I would buy a pre-made smoothie, and I would not get a clear juice. I found that if I drink a glass of apple juice, it raises my blood sugar too fast and I don't feel well. But if I drink a smoothie, it's fine. So the thing with a smoothie, something that's pureed fruit that you drink, it has fiber in it, and it has a variety of things in it, especially if you get one that has greens in it, that's going to raise the blood pressure, blood sugar slower. I would choose to get a bottle of something that had fiber in it. I would also consider doing pomegranate juice, and pomegranate juice doesn't tend to raise your blood sugar as fast as apple juice. Apple juice and straight up orange juice, they raise your blood sugar pretty fast, and I don't feel well when I eat them. But if I have a smoothie, it's no problem at all, you know, and it should taste thick, and you should make sure that it has a lot of fiber in it. So that's all you get this week. It was nice to talk to you. All right, so you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.